Hello, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Amanda Vinicky. Brandis Friedman has the evening off. Here's what we're looking at. Safety advocates push to lower the citywide speed limit, but will it change driver behavior? Construction begins for Brookfield Zoo's redevelopment plan in preparation for its centennial. And cruise the Chicago River while learning about efforts to take care of it. And now to some of today's top stories. A three-month-old boy is hospitalized after being shot over the weekend. The shooting happened on West 26th Street in the Little Village neighborhood Saturday afternoon. Police say the boy was inside a car when a 21-year-old man when they were approached by another vehicle. Two men exited and opened fire. The boy was shot in the chest. The man was shot multiple times. The Chicago Sun-Times reports the boy is undergoing surgery today. Bad news, Bears. Governor J.B. Pritzker says Illinois approving money this fall for the team's plan for a new stadium in the city will be near impossible. He says he told the Bears that during a recent private meeting. The governor says the earliest lawmakers would even consider a Bears deal would be spring.
But in reality, there isn't a proposal on the table right now that would be acceptable to anyone that I know in the legislature.
Insurers in Illinois will have to cover home births, doulas, and midwives.
No government should decide when or if a family grows, and ensures that when families do expand, both mom and baby have access to the care they need to get home safely.
The law Pritzker signed today also says insurance companies cannot charge deductibles or coinsurance for abortions. Lactation consultants and other postpartum services must be covered for up to a year after a baby's birth. It's part of a broader state investment in maternal care, like funding for the first birthing center on the South Side and a small pilot program to provide poor families with diapers. The law takes effect in January. Cook County property tax bills are due Thursday, but if you can't pay in full, there's another option. Starting Friday, go to the Cook County Treasurer's Office website where there's an option for an online payment plan. Paying installments can help delinquent commercial and residential property owners from losing their buildings and homes.
It's for everyone. Let's say by some, you know, great imagination, you own Sears Tower and the bill's $13 million. You can actually go online and set up a payment plan for Sears Tower. If you're in a bungalow in the south suburbs and you owe $2,000, you can set up a payment plan that way.
Up next, an effort to lower the citywide speed limit. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Some city officials want us all to slow down. Alderman Daniel Espada is sponsoring an ordinance to reduce Chicago's citywide speed limit from 30 miles per hour to 25. Advocates say it could significantly curb the amount of traffic injuries and fatalities. But critics are raising concerns over enforcement, practicality, and economic drawbacks, and question whether the measure is really an attempt to raise revenue for the city through increased traffic fines. Joining us now with more are Audrey Winnick, Senior Director of the Metropolitan Planning Council, and W. Robert Schultz III, and campaign organizer at the Active Transportation Alliance. We also reached out to some opponents of this plan. They were, however, unable to join us this evening. We are appreciative that you both are. However, Audrey, we're going to begin with you. The proposal would slow down 5 miles an hour. Why would such a small change make a big impact?
Yeah, it's really quite amazing. I mean, driving 5 miles an hour less means you have shorter stopping distance. So drivers right now, they need about 120 feet to stop at 30 miles an hour, and they only need about 85 feet. So it really makes a huge difference in terms of physics and in terms of seeing pedestrians, people crossing the street. The view you have is really widened a lot when you slow down. and the chance of a person dying is about 50% less if a car hits a pedestrian. So there's so many benefits.
Just because the car is going so much slower, the force that you hit somebody with.
Correct.
Sorry to get
Yeah, the
here,
physics
but...
of it. Yeah, the physics of it.
Now, there are, however, other things that could be done, presumably, to enhance public safety other than changing the speed limit. I'm thinking about road size, adding bike lanes, maybe those islands where it's sort of a raised crosswalk. Aren't there other measures the city could take?
Yeah, the city is doing that. And I think the point here is that we need to do both because obviously we have a lot of miles of road in this city and sidewalk, and it takes time. So the city's doing that, but we also need to educate people on the importance of changing their speeds. And so if they change the speed limit, they need to change all the signs. And so just having this signage alone is a massive education campaign, and so that would contribute to people's changing behavior, we would hope. And we've seen that in other cities.
You're saying basically people would notice the signs changing, say, give them something to think about?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, what about you, Robert? You're on board with this plan? How come?
Yes, absolutely. One of the reasons is by having single default speed limit throughout the city, you know what your speed limit is. Right now, we have school zones and other zones where you really don't know if you're in that zone and you have to slow down. And so
you don't know until you get a ticket, perhaps.
Right, right, absolutely. So with a universal lower speed limit, there's no more guessing. And it makes it safe for people both inside the car and outside the car. And I've been hit a couple times.
You've been hit a couple of times.
And in fact, I had a family member hit over the weekend in another city.
Are they okay? I'm so
sorry.
They're
great.
Okay.
They're fun. But even a low impact can cause, in this case of my nephew, a light concussion. When I got hit, I got very bruised that stayed with me for several weeks. So, and it was like a SUV with the hood like right here. And I'm a tall person.
And
you know, cars are getting heavier and people are getting more reckless with their driving behavior.
And not to get too much into the details of what happened to you, but is it something where you think 5 miles an hour would have made a difference? Was it a car going at a slow speed?
All they did was turn around the corner, but they weren't observant that I was in the crosswalk and I had the way to cross the street. And they hit me at a slow speed. But even at a slow speed with a massive SUV, that caused a severe bruise.
And so that is part of this, right, Audrey, that our cars are changing. Traffic behavior is changing on the part of drivers who are, I don't know, are they busy looking at their phones? Is that maybe something that, again, needs to be explored?
Well, distraction is certainly part of the problem. But we've seen crashes and fatalities increase a lot over the past several years, 10 years or so, and it's a combination of people being more reckless and speeding. We've seen behavior get a lot worse during COVID, and it's stayed worse. There's a lot of road rage, and we see that 40% of all the fatalities and serious injuries in our region are related to speeding and aggressive driving. So we really are trying to figure out all the different ways that we can cut down on people's speed and help them drive in a very cognizant manner of what's around them.
Now, Robert, you support this, but you do have some concerns as it relates to equity. This is something about what, in sort of enforcement, and you're concerned that particular
right.
communities will be targeted?
Yes, we on a whole nother table, I've been working on issues related to pretextual traffic stops and racial profiling. And then also we're working on the issue of equitable fines. A fine for a low-income person is economically burdensome, whereas for someone with more means, a fine is like a little fly on the hand, right? So as we begin to re-examine how we have our streets, what the speed limits are, what are the fines, how we reconstruct our streets. I used to live near Cicero, and it's like almost an expressway, the way people drive on it, because the lanes are wide. So we had to take a comprehensive approach to this.
What would enforcement for something like this look like? Are you talking about not a monetary penalty if somebody were to go past a lower speed limit?
I think those are things that we're going to have to explore with the community and our aldermen. But certainly we want to make sure that fines tell people to change their behavior, but we don't want fines to be economic burden such that they're driven into debt.
Is that something that has been explored?
Yeah, I would just add, they passed a resolution, or introduced a resolution at the same time as this ordinance, which would set up an interagency working group that would have about a year before the ordinance would go into effect to figure all this stuff out.
Because what are some even possible other options besides a
penalty?
Well,
you could, yeah, I mean, if you pass a law and you don't enforce it, what's the point?
Right.
So you do need to enforce it. But you can do, you know, you could do phased in warnings. You can figure out what the pricing of the ticket is.
Sort of graduated pricing.
Exactly. You could have graduated pricing based on income. There are strategies you can take to try to make it. You want to make the impact reasonable, but also have an impact so people notice it and they want to change their behavior.
And would this enforcement be mostly up to what, speed cameras, because police are otherwise are overburdened as is? Or,
well, speed cameras are part of it. Certainly we have speed cameras here. It would be probably a combination, but you know, that remains to be determined.
And once you lower that speed limit, we talk about unlocking the possibility of redesigning the streets to support a lower speed limit. But until you lower it, you don't get that unlocking effect.
So what do you say to folks who, there is, of course, the concern that this is a money grab, but maybe also people who just say, I'm already going crazy being stuck in traffic. If you lower the speed, it's going to take me even more. This is just going to up my road rage.
Well, people think that. But if you're in an urban environment, which, you know, Chicago is, you're going from speed light, traffic light to traffic light, and stop sign to stop sign. So, you know, really just gunning it in between traffic lights is what we're trying to, you know, prevent. You know,
it's not going to save or take any more time because you're still going to be stuck at those lights?
Yeah, not really. I mean, 5 miles an hour in the scheme of things, it's not going to change your travel time much at all.
And I think we've got about 10 seconds left. So last word goes to you, Robert. Chicago wouldn't be the first.
We want Chicago to be safe for everyone, whether you're inside a car or outside the car.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your perspective with us, to each of you, Audrey and Robert. Up next, Brookfield Zoo unveils its wild renovation plans. We get a peek right after this. Thank you. Brookfield Zoo is going wild with its latest expansion plans. The changes are detailed in the zoo's $500 million Next Century Plan. That's in anticipation of Brookfield Zoo's 100th anniversary. That's coming up in 2034. More than 100 acres of the zoo's grounds are set to undergo renovation or development in a four-phase plan that calls for transforming traditional exhibit spaces into ecoregions that allow different species to roam between various habitats. Now, joining us now with more on the Next Century Plan is Dr. Michael Adkison, the CEO and president of Brookfield Zoo. This is pretty extensive. What is the inspiration behind all of it?
We are so excited about this plan. We've been hard at work on it for the last year and are really looking to take advantage of our 100th birthday here coming up in 2034 to really reshape the zoo over the next decade leading up to that centennial and then beyond.
What is an ecoregion?
So ecoregions are just different environments around the globe, and we really want to take our guests on a journey where they're not just experiencing one animal in an environment, but they're really experiencing that whole ecosystem. So they're seeing how animals would be in the wild with mixed species habitats where there's different animals together in an immersive landscape where they really feel like they're being transported to another part of the globe as a chance to see animals as they would in the wild.
I haven't been able to go to Africa for a safari, say, but I can go to Brookfield.
Exactly.
And it'll feel like something like that.
Exactly. We know a lot of people are never going to get the chance to go on a safari. They're never going to trek through the jungle looking for a tiger or scuba dive with dolphins, but we can replicate those experiences at the zoo as a way of really capturing our guests into that that journey of conservation and being able to tell those stories about the threats facing these animals in the wild and all of the incredible things that are being done to help protect the animals as well as the wild spaces that they live in.
Since we can't quite visit yet, give me an example. What sort of species might be paired together? And what would this be for, for a visitor that wants to take a gander?
Sure. So right now we're in the middle of tropical forest, which is a new $66 million project for our gorillas and orangutans and monkeys that'll be opening next year. But following that, we're really looking ahead to an Australian expansion and a gateway to Africa area. And that gateway to Africa is conceived around the idea of these large herds of different antelope together. You may see rhinos and giraffes together in a savanna habitat. You may see elephants mixed in with rhinos in a forest habitat. And just that constant changing of animals in their spaces, it's not just enriching for the animals, but it's also makes for a more exciting journey for our guests, as you may not see the same thing in the same space every time you come.
So get them back coming more often.
Yeah, yeah.
This is part of an animal rotation, I understand. So does that mean that some will be hidden from public view, or is it just that they are going to be roaming because there's a bigger space for them to do so?
It's the latter. So as we look at Gateway to Africa, we're looking at 35 acres worth of space there within the zoo set aside for these different habitats and the ability to just let animals move between them and get in that activity and that exercise as they would in the wild moving between different spaces.
Is this then more visitor-focused or more done for the animals' advantage?
It's both. It's really a combination of what both of those things. So our primary focus is always what's best for our animals. We're always focused on the wellness and well-being of all of the animals in our care, but we also want our guests to have that really exciting experience as they come to the zoo, because that's really the core of our mission, is to save wildlife. And in order to save them, we have to get people to care about them. We have to get them to want to come along on that journey with us to understand what they can do in their daily lives to help make a difference for wildlife around the world.
And what benefits are there for the animals? More space?
Yeah, so the space is big, but also just that changing of the daily routine, so to speak, so that the animals are also being challenged to sort of intellectually think about what they're doing, where they're going on any given day, different experiences, different animals to interact with. Those
sort of types stimulated,
of things.
Perhaps.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is more than just transforming the physical zoo campus, correct?
Correct, yeah. So one of the things that we wanted to accomplish with this Next Century Plan was not just to create a physical map for the zoo, but really to look at all of our programmatic elements as well. So this plan includes a framework for our conservation strategy. It includes our educational and community outreach programming. It includes our commitment to a zoo for all, which is all of our inclusivity opportunities to really make the zoo a welcoming environment for people of all backgrounds. It includes our green
operations.
What does
that look like? Before you, let's
sure.
go ahead.
Yeah.
What does that look like in terms of accessibility? Are we talking about maybe for, I don't know, folks who are wheelchair bound, or is this more of an economic strategy?
It's both. It's really making sure that all audiences feel welcome. So those that have challenges, we want to make sure that we're able to work within the confines of those mental or physical challenges. But it's also making sure that we're welcoming to people throughout Cook County and the Chicagoland region, and that we're providing opportunities for folks to make it to the zoo and actually come have that experience, as well as getting our education and community staff out into those communities where we can provide science-based education, we can provide conservation information, we can really get out and partner locally.
So let's talk about the money.
Yes.
Which is this costing and who's paying for it?
Yeah, so the Next Century Plan, as we've conceived it right now, we're making a $500 commitment towards this 15-year plan. Now, this plan has really got a 30-year vision to it. So, this
so half
is,
billion dollars
yeah,
over
15 years.
50, okay.
Yeah, and of that, $100 million of that is set aside for an endowment to really help ensure our financial sustainability long-term. And then the $400 million that's an investment into capital, we're about halfway there in having that as committed or pledged funds already, or funds in hand. So,
does this mean, so looking to people who are able to contribute, but does this also mean maybe ticket prices going up?
So we're not contemplating any ticket price increases right now. Now, obviously, you know, prices continue to rise. We have a lot of animals to feed. There's a lot of care costs considered in that. But right now, we're not making any decisions around rising ticket prices.
Is this something that is going to be a totally different experience for folks who maybe haven't been to Brookfield Zoo in a while? And if they do come, they get excited to see this segment, perhaps.
Yeah.
Are they going to not be able to see any animals while the construction is underway?
So As we progress, there will certainly be times where certain animals may not be visible. That's just inevitable as we work through updating 100-year-old infrastructure. But for the most part, the zoo will be open, and we'll be trying to make sure that we have experiences that complement those that are offline. Right now, those that come are going to see us right in the middle of this $66 million project, which is just incredible to see it coming to life. So definitely would encourage everybody to be ready to come next summer as we open this new tropical forest habitat up. It's going to be a preview of everything that's to come down the road.
And already I know the dolphins have a new home. Yes. And you've got some koalas. Willem and Brumby. Brumby, how are they?
They are great. They have settled in so well. They're a huge hit with our guests. It's the first time in our 90-year history that we've actually had koalas at Brookfield Zoo, if you can believe that.
I can't.
So we're excited about it. The dolphins, $10 million investment in their facility to bring forward a number of new features in there for the wellness of those animals and just to update the physical structures. And other new exciting changes in a North American prairie aviary with sandhill cranes and prairie chickens. Just a lot going on right
Butterfly
now.
Butterfly house and amphitheater. Yes, so yeah. much coming. But yeah. we're talking about the physical part. In our last 30 seconds or so, there's an app and an AI component as well?
Yeah, so we've launched a new app this year. So it's a great way for us to push information to our guests as they move through the park so that as they're looking at an animal, we want to be able to share a conservation story about that animal. We want to be able to tell them the details of that animal and its family, and we want to be able to make it a very interactive process as people move through the zoo.
Well, you are roaring ahead. Happy 90th birthday to the zoo.
You.
Not to you. I almost wish happy birthday to you. No, to the zoo. Thank you very much for joining
Thank
us.
Thank you so much.
And up next, enjoy the Chicago River while learning about efforts to take care of it. First, a look at the weather. Are you looking to take a break from the city rush? Well, the Shedd Aquarium is offering an opportunity to explore the tranquil beauty of the Chicago River while learning about efforts to take care of it. Chicago Tonight's Joanna Hernandez brought us this story earlier this summer. Here's another look.
When we like turn the corner here, like you'll see like Sears Tower and like everything, and it's obvious that you're right downtown. So you want your paddle to be facing you like this the whole time.
Meet Maggie Cooper, one of the leaders of the Conservation Action Department at the Shedd Aquarium.
And your hips just move with your butts. So you're kind of doing your best Shakira impression today, making sure those hips don't lie. I get to be outside and explore nature every single day. But what I love the most is that I get to take other people along.
It's Cooper's first paddle of the season as the Shedd Aquarium kicks off its fifth year of kayaking for conservation tours.
We take people out all summer long to explore the Chicago River in a way that people are maybe not necessarily familiar with.
Along the way, you'll spot ducks, birds, and even beavers.
We're at around like 74 different species of fish in the river now, which is awesome. And like 25 of those about are like resident fish species.
Cooper says it's an interactive experience for people to learn about the river and wildlife and how they're being cared for.
Here, we've just kind of cut down some of the invasive plants that were overhanging the river and dropped them in. Something as simple as this provides great habitat for turtles.
One of the stops along the way is the wetlands installations, located in the north branch of the river. They are wildlife sanctuaries with a variety of native plants.
These are providing a really amazing critical habitat right here on the Chicago River that otherwise we don't have. If we look beyond these islands, we will see just steel walls kind of right along the way here. And if you could kind of picture this as a fish, you would have a flat bottom steel wall, sort of just a highway coming through here, nowhere to rest, hang out. So it's providing habitat below the water. These plants, their roots are coming right out the bottom of these mats, and their root systems are providing habitat for fish, and they're providing habitat up top for birds and bugs, too.
Birds.
Yes, you sure can.
It's a collaboration started with the nonprofit Urban Rivers, called the Wild Mile Chicago, the city's first floating eco park. The project has created floating islands aimed at improving water quality.
We know that these plants will draw toxins and other stuff out of the water that maybe shouldn't be there. So they have a lot of different levels of the ways that they're helping to improve the river.
And it's easy to forget you're in the middle of the city when you're surrounded by the sights and sounds of nature.
the Chicago River is a space for everyone to enjoy. It's easy to just go over the river on your car or walking over a bridge downtown and looking at it and see like, yeah, that's cool, that's something there, but it's not really for me. But I want everyone to know that they can get out to programs like this.
For Chicago Tonight, I'm Joanna Hernandez.
The Shedd Aquarium offers these tours on a pay-what-you-can basis. To learn more about the operation days, visit our website. Looks like fun to me. That is our show for this Monday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and at 10. We've got 3 weeks out from the Democratic National Convention. When will Harris announce her running mate? And a high number of tornadoes have hit Illinois already this year. A look at the role climate change may play. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Amanda Vinicky. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm dedicated to preserving the dignity and rights of all individuals.